Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So here we are with Tom Dart, Sheriff of Cook County, wearing a suit and freaking me out.
Yeah, me too.
I've never seen you in a suit.
Me too.
Usually it's the, like that whole Mount Carmel Beverly look with the khaki pants, the construction boots, and the sweater.
They're in the car as we speak. I'm getting a very nice award from Loyola University tonight, and it was impressed upon me by everyone involved that the normal uniform I wear was not going to work. So as much as it pains me, and mind you, the suit doesn't fit.
Why don't you just admit it, that it wasn't everyone involved? Your wife said you're wearing a suit to this
thing. Please. She's tried forever. My brother says I look like I'm homeless. I mean, they've tried every conceivable scheme to get me to put a suit on. I was like, it ain't working. I will tell you, if you ever see me in a nice tie, it's not mine. It's been given to me by someone who wants me to not look so shabby.
So, like, yeah, when you have to go for those dinners at the big clubs or wherever.
Strategically, I don't get invited to too often.
Me neither. So what's new? What's new in the world of Tom Dart?
Yeah, you know, we're like always, you know, I often tell people with my job, one of the reasons I love it so much is that I never am bored. There's never 2 days that are alike. So we always have something going. Today we got out of since the 60s, consent decree that the county jail has been involved with since the 60s. It was called the Duran consent decree. It got wrapped into this other one, and we were just dismissed from today. First jail ever to get out of a consent decree.
Well, why were you in it in the 60s?
It was overcrowding was originally it. Then they rolled it into overcrowding / ill treatment of the mentally ill. Then it got that added on to use of force issues at the jail and medical issues. And so it all got rolled into one. And so we've had a federal monitor now for about 9 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. Three of them, actually. And today was the end of it.
How many people are in that jail?
You know, our numbers are down, John, but, you know, the kicker is that there's too many people.
Because Kim Fox isn't prosecuting anybody?
No, you know, no, because here's what it is. Yeah. There's all these people are wanting to do
those shoplifters.
Want to do this victory lap that, you know, okay, you know, that we only have the right people in the jail now, victory lap everyone. Like, no, guys, let's do this thing called math. Before, I used to have about 10,000 people in the jail and about 400 or 500 people on electronic monitoring. Now I have about 8,000 people in the jail and 2,500 people on electronic monitoring. So it's about the same amount of people involved in the criminal justice system, but about 2,500 of them I'm, you know, incarcerating in their houses. So they're still involved, but they're at a different location. And that presents, you know, different issues for me because most of the houses they're incarcerated in are from the neighborhoods they came from, and a lot of these are really violent neighborhoods.
One of we've got so much to talk about, that right-to-know thing with the Internet, which is, to me, just fascinating. Clearly, you're the sheriff, so there's also a crime and I don't want to call it punishment since you're sitting here. Crime and hiring prep.
Punishment is sitting with me normally, if you'd ask my wife.
And then, yeah. And then, and there's so much, but I want to, before we begin, the last time you were on, and things change, right, in politics and the world, I was thinking that you may have been a good candidate for mayor of Chicago. I don't see that anymore. Not that it's not a diss of you. Mm-hmm. It's just the way I see things. I'm looking, is Tom Dart raising a lot of money? Is he like, you know, doing that whole young mayor on the come, like I'm coming up to be the mayor guy?
Yeah, that's never been my
shtick. I don't see it.
It's never been my shtick, and I'm not saying I have the right shtick, but fundraising's never been my forte. And It's been pointed out to me a lot. So
by people who care about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I just, you know, I always tell people, listen, I'm not a saint. No one likes raising money other than maybe Blagojevich. But other than that, it's a painful thing to do. But I'm particularly not the best at it.
It just seems that the mayoral thing is not on the front burner now.
It's not on the front burner, that's for sure.
Right.
And a lot of it, though, is driven by the fact that I have this job. I love what I do. And it confounds people. They're like, how can you like this job? And I was like, two things. I go, one, what other job do you know where you really don't have a boss other than the voters? I mean, literally, I have to go to the county board once a year for my budget. But other than that, if I want to go in this direction or that direction, I can just do it. And I mean, look at Washington, Springfield. When was the last time they got anything done where we can do things literally every minute? We can pivot. We can go this direction or that. So I like that. And then, frankly, we've taken on a national leadership role in the criminal justice area with trying to right-size it. You know, people always throw around the word reform all the time. But it's more a question of we have some evil, horrible people out in our streets right now. We need to have all of our resources focused on them. We can't have them focused on people who are mentally ill, people who, out of indifference, who are just committing goofy little crimes. We're just putting them in jail, leaving them there for a little bit of time, letting them go, not treating them, not doing anything. They're just letting them go. I go, that's not thoughtful. Let's be thoughtful and go after the really bad guys.
Jeff? Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. That's John. That's what John does when he wants to collect his thoughts and wants me to tap a little bit.
No, because I like Tom.
I wish I had that.
I like Tom, and that's why I there's sometimes when you like a guy and he says something that you don't like, you just keep your mouth shut. You know? Right?
I got
a south side thing.
It is.
Right?
It's definitely
you go,
a south
hey,
side thing.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So you look down the bar and there's Jeff, and he's sitting right at the bar.
Yeah.
We're at McNally's right now on 111th Street, hating on the Cubs, and there you are.
Yeah. I wouldn't be there because I don't hate on the Cubs, but hey.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of doing things the right way or being a role model in that situation, before we got rolling, we were talking about this program at the jail to teach inmates a skill, specifically cooking. And I just wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit about that, where that came from. I mean, I know it kind of just fell out of the sky almost because
really it sort of did because we've got this guy who's amazing named Bruno Abadi. He's a phenomenal chef who went to Italy and literally almost had like one of these moments where he saw what he wanted to do the rest of his life because there's this prison in Padua that has this remarkable program where they cook, they do all these wild things. And he wanted to bring it here, and so it was like no loss to us. It cost me nothing. It cost the taxpayers not a penny, and so let's try it. But the other part of that is if we're ever going to get around this crime issue that's just destroying these communities, we got to give opportunities for jobs to people. And for me to run like typewriting programs, you know, astrophysics for detainees doesn't work real well. Cooking, I met with the restaurant associations. They said they'll take guys if we'll train them, give them food handling certificates. And in this group, they're getting a higher level of certificates. But it was trying to figure out, now, what's scalable? You know, I can come up with some goofy little program to help 10 guys out of the 8,000 in there. That doesn't help a community. But if I can get this massive program to give job opportunities for people, so when they walk out of the place, there's at least a chance, instead of them looking at me saying, I'm probably going back to dealing dope again because I'm not going to get a job.
Yeah,
so, I mean, that's where the food program came from. And Bruno's been running with this thing. And as I said, he's been funding it himself. But my next project there is to get a food truck to sell the food out in front. And the thing I've been telling people, this is a bipartisan effort. We had Ron Gidwitz, who's an incredible man. He donated the pizza oven in the place. He's going to work with us on getting the food truck, too. He says he has a guy who will pay for that. These are all heavy Republican donors who are sitting there saying, you know what, it makes sense to try to give these guys jobs because I don't want to keep paying for them to keep coming in and out of your place with no end in sight. So that's where that one comes from. But I'll tell you, it is hard to try to figure out what is this one or two type of skill set I want to give detainees that will allow them to get jobs so they don't go back to crime. It's tricky, but the food area seems to be the best one so far.
And it seems to be going really well, and I believe that you might have an opening for a beer can chicken seminar, because I know a certain Greek who is very good at that.
We are always open for that, and I tell you what, that would be probably our number one seller on the menu right now.
If you did that on like a GIF where the sheriff of Cook County, the jail, is doing the beer can chicken, That would be pretty hot, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
John, I've often thought that, you know, seriously, with all these crazy cooking programs that are out there, and my wife loves watching these things, and I don't cook. I know you do, but I, you know, Southside guy that, you know,
grew up, I know you're like mom and dad's basement. What is the joke? A potato and six-pack, seven-pack.
Pretty much there. As a single man living in my house by myself with my dog for 17 years, there when I finally broke from mommy and daddy's basement, I can tell you the only thing in my fridge was ever those things. And you know what? The potatoes always went bad on me. I never got around to even cooking those.
So where do you how does this thing work? This program,
it's, you know, it's, Bruno selects guys, and his is a smaller group of programs because we can only fit, you know, about 35 or 40 in that program at a time. But the bigger one is in the actual bigger living units to say, listen, guys, it's an 8-hour course. We're going to do it online by the TV in the living unit. And they fulfill the course requirements. They get a certificate. When they leave, they have the opportunity now to be hired in a restaurant anywhere to work in the kitchen. The big thing is, and the Restaurant Association has been very helpful. We haven't closed the loop yet. But I told them, I go, if I can give you the geography where these guys are coming from, if you can get the restaurants in those areas to open up, they tell me they don't care if they have a felony background as long as it's not, you know, violence and, you know, sexual assault stuff.
Right.
They said, we'll connect them. So I'm trying to use computer technology to connect these guys based on their address with the restaurants in their community.
The problem is it's a lot of the communities, restaurants in lower income areas where much crime, not all crime, but some of it occurs. Those are usually mom and pops.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like they're barely making it because of the tax situation. And,
yeah.
And, you know, minimum wage and all that stuff. So it's like dad with his son and a nephew and mom.
Yeah.
Basically, nobody's getting paid.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's where, as I say, John, it's interesting. I always tell people, you know, sometimes people say it because they're being sort of, you know, snarky, and they're saying, well, you tell me what's better. I always tell them, I go, please, please, anybody who has some other ideas on things that we can start training people to jail, let us know, because we'll give it a try. Because the thing I often say about the criminal justice system, John, we can't conceivably, you know, screw it up any more than it is. So if someone's got an idea of where we can train people in a certain skill, let's try it.
I just like the idea of all these guys from Cook County Jail being prep cooks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know we have all
seems
the stuff
like
chained. We have everything chained. We have everything chained down to the tables. No one's walking off.
All the boning knives are chained down. So
they're all chained down. We haven't had any incidents yet.
Cut those chickens in quarters. Generally.
Yeah, and
find the joint and let the knife work right through the joint.
There you see. I'm like, see, you ought to come down there with Bruno. Put the hat on with him, and you can work him on the chicken part.
My brother Nicky and I used to have this thing when my dad had the store in California. We used to have chicken cutting competitions. And this is stupid, right, for teenage
boys. Those are sharp knives.
Yeah. Razor-sharp knives, like doing a chicken in 10 seconds, 11 seconds. Bone, you know, taking a chicken, cutting legs, thighs,
breasts.
Yeah, it makes me squeamish thinking of it.
Insane.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm not qualified to teach your guys anything. What is the menu on this thing?
It's pizza that is cooked in a wood-burning oven. I think there's like two or three variations of it, and it's meant for us to sell to the public to make money for the program. But prior to getting the food truck, we're selling it to the inmates, and we're making quite a bit of money from the inmates paying for it. And that then defrays the cost of other things we do in the jail.
Because
the inmates had these little trust counts.
Wood-burning oven?
Yeah, Ron Gigwitz gave it to us.
In a truck?
The truck we don't have yet, but that's going to occur. That's going to occur within the next 9 months.
These are the small pizzas, right?
Yeah,
yeah. John, we were just describing earlier, and it's very much like test kitchen. They got the camera up top and the screen, so you can see what's being done.
Oh yeah,
and the downshot, and it's
in the kitchen themselves.
Yeah,
right
to teach. Yeah,
it's,
impressive. I mean, they've put a lot of time and energy, and all of it's private money. None of it's taxpayer money that they raised, and it is like something you'd expect in a on a TV show as far as like training them. And these guys get this skill. Theirs is different. They can go to a restaurant and some of them have already and have gotten big jobs back in the kitchen. The larger group were just trying to train in how to clean and stuff like that.
So he picks them? How does he go through?
He does interviews. He does
to pick his like acolytes.
God. And I'll tell you what, they absolutely fear him more than they fear me.
Now, that's the group where if I'm going to do the prep cooking, the knives are on chains.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right?
And Bruno's been great. We had to really emphasize to him at the front end, you know, this is obviously different, so we got to do some things a little different
liability,
here.
Liability.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's
John.
All liability.
John, most I get sued all the time, John.
I know, but most of these guys don't want to stab each other with those knives.
No, no.
If they're going to stab each other, it's going to be the one that didn't. We had new knives, but we only have nine, and so that's the one.
Yeah, these guys have a different mindset, and it's not to say one won't go south on us, but their mindset is this is the first time anyone's paid any great deal of attention to them enough to give them a really substantial job, and they don't want to screw it up.
So pizza?
Pizza, right now, they've been taught how to make pasta by hand from scratch. They make sauces from scratch, and we have two farms there at the jail as well, and we sell that mostly to all the restaurants downtown. And we used to make
I've
my first
come out here now. What are you talking about?
Our tomatoes are really good.
When I see because the Tom Dart publicity machine gets going, and then it's like Tom's saving the life of some hookers over here, and Tom's doing this with tomatoes, and I just shut that part down. Okay. Well, but you do it right.
The farms you ought to come out and see, because we do. You know, it's funny because Bruno was riding me about this, because we take our orders from the restaurants. We say, what do you want us to grow? And apparently you'd know this more than me. I didn't know this because I don't know how to cook.
He's the restaurant man.
But they told me that when you harvest something, so like when you take a tomato off a vine or whatever it is, there is this unique chemical event that goes on. So the closer you are from harvesting it to serving it, it will taste objectively different. Mm-hmm. And our farm is the closest to these restaurants of anywhere. So there's a real value for them getting our stuff. And they're paying for it. We used to make about $500 a year on it. Now we're up to $15,000 a year.
Wow.
And we're going to get more. But
do you have enough land?
We do. But you know what the problem is, John? Some of the land out there needed remediation. So we've had to do these raised beds out there.
Oh, right.
But I'm thinking that I want to plant corn in a lot of other places, because I don't think that's going to have remediation issues. But the areas where we had big remediation issues, we are growing flowers that we're selling. We're making a lot of money off the flowers we're growing out by the old boot camp. And there's this one company, I can't remember the name of them, and I apologize.
What do you grow, like the
I don't know the difference.
Special Sheehan rose?
I don't know the difference between any of this stuff. I can't cook. I can't grow stuff. I'm like so useless. When I got married, I think I almost put foxes out of business, because I was like every night. It's like they didn't even ask. They were just like, yeah.
Have you been out there? I mean, I've been to D1. I've been to the, usually like bond court is the closest I get to the jail, Lowest possible bond, Your Honor. High school graduate.
Yeah.
But I have seen stories about the natural splendor of the... I have to come out and see it.
Yeah,
you got it.
So what do you grow, tomatoes? What else do you grow?
We grow all this crazy
microgreens.
Greens, there you go. Microgreens, and then we have a lot of Roma tomatoes, which Bruno... wants me to cut back on. He wants me to cut back on those. He wants me to do some other tomato. I have no idea what he's talking about. And tons of microgreens. We have a greenhouse that we run in the winter, and we have seeds donated to us, so it costs us nothing. Then we grow them in the greenhouse during the winter, and that's our planting. So we cut our expenses down to next to nothing. And these guys are getting a pretty good skill.
Who runs this?
We have this one woman who's phenomenal, and she runs it, and she's got like one other person that works for her, and that's it. And she works with these detainees around the clock, and it's incredible. I mean, she's like their social worker too, and
they get points. Like,
no, we're trying to do something along those lines to build more of an incentive program in it. These guys don't need incentive; they love it because they're outdoors all the time, and so they don't get.
What's
anything.
The next, like, service dogs? You're going to start. Like,
we tried to, but John,
like
we couldn't do it. We tried to, John, but we couldn't because
we
didn't.
You tried it?
Well, because, it wasn't because we hurt any animals that we stopped it. No, we didn't even kick it off because our guys, once again, getting back to this sort of bizarre system of This guy's going to wait 9 years. This guy's going to wait 9 hours before he's released. Right. We don't know who we can put in the programs because we don't know how long they're going to be in there. And the service dog thing, we had to know we had a universe of people that we knew were going to be there, I think, for 9 months
and
solid.
Then you have to pick the right ones out of
that. That's what I was going
to
say, John. And so what ends up happening, John, in a lot of these jails and prisons, and we haven't been doing this, to fit these programs that have these defined periods, they pick the worst guys because they know they're going to be there the longest. And I was like, let me do the math on that. Those guys are also the ones that are not going back to the community. They're going down to prison. I go, why are we doing this? This makes no sense at all. And see, that's the kicker, John. That if there's one thing that I can impart on people is please get this understanding that when you talk about like the violence in the communities and that, this common misperception that it's because of all these people flooding out of the prisons. Prisons where people serve a sentence, jails, you're waiting on your case. The big distinction. Yeah. But no one ever started looking at the numbers until we started really working the data. 85% of the people that come in the jail go straight from the jail back to the community. But all the programs were geared toward work on them when they leave prison. No one was like putting programs together for them to leave the jail because it wasn't thought that they were either A, going to be in there long, or B, they're all going to prison. And we come to find out they're all – we're the hub of the dysfunction going out to the community. And so that's why we started putting all these programs in. But certain programs are trickier because these guys – they come and go, and we don't have a real connection with
bees.
The judges.
Do you have bees?
Yeah. Yeah. We have, I think, five highs.
You have bees?
Yes, we do. We do.
You're freaking me out.
Yeah. We have bees. The bees are all around the farm, so it's had this sort of, you know, reciprocal relationship. You would understand. I wouldn't. But we got the bees. We had chickens for a while, but that didn't work. That didn't work out.
Really? You had chickens?
Yeah, we had.
Like, too many rats.
Well, it was that, but then the other part of it, John, I'm adamant with all these.
The chicken droppings, like tilapia.
Yeah. Right. We had tilapia for a while, too. But
that's why you don't. So the chicken, you had chickens and
tilapia?
Yeah,
but see, the problems with the chickens is that the person that I had that sort of got me kicking off sort of misrepresented things to me. What I mean by that is that I told them it has to make money. And he was very adamant, you know, we have these really cool cartons that have the jail on it. These are organic, blah, blah, blah. All fine. I come to run the numbers, and you cannot make money off of a chicken coop unless you have like 300 chickens.
Yeah. Or
well, we only had 30 of them. And I was like, we're losing money. We can't lose money on these things. We can't do that. So I got rid of the chickens in a humane way. I got rid of them. And
I don't care. I'm not one of those people. I'm not going to hug a chicken. Yeah. Rex Hupke had this thing about chicken snuggling. Poor guy. I was like, whoa.
Well, I love his column. He's so funny.
He is. I tweeted that out. Said, this is a great column.
Yeah. He's so funny. But so we tried the chicken. The tilapia was another thing we did because we had the and I'm losing it right now because it's been over for like 5 years now. But
okay, but what do you say to a guy like me at the beginning of this, okay, when you started that and I was quiet? You're like, oh, John, you're quiet. You know what I mean? Because I was thinking, why are you doing I mean, I like you, man. You know,
yeah, sure,
that.
I know.
But then I don't like – I want a jail like that's going to be a jail. Not a community college. Like, and next week we'll do leaded glass, or witch. Well, maybe blow
underwater
witch's
basket
balls.
Reaving.
Yeah.
Blow witch's balls is like a glass talk.
Okay.
Relax.
Yes. No,
okay?
I got you.
You understand? Uh-huh. They blow a ball out of the line.
No,
okay.
It. Yeah.
Relax, mister.
Yeah, but see, the common misperception is that this is all about, you know, hugging everyone in there. No, no, no. The bottom line is that the only way we're going to get these cycles to stop is if we give jobs. We get jobs and we make people eligible for jobs or qualified for jobs. And I'll never forget, John, when I first became sheriff, like my first year in there, I had a guy that was in Division 11. I was wandering around checking things out and saying, hey, how are we treating?
He's like, who are you?
Yeah. And he's like, hey, how are we treating
you? Who are you, mister? Like, he goes, oh. 19th warder in khaki pants?
Yeah.
And,
he goes, oh, you're the sheriff. He goes, well, right. I just want to compliment you. He goes, this is the best it's ever been. I said, well, that's sort of sad because it means you've been here before. And he goes, yeah. And I go, how much longer are you going to be here? And he goes, I'm getting out this week. I go, you sure? And he goes, yeah, I'm pleading out. I'm getting out. And I asked him, I go, you don't want to be here. And he goes, no, I got kids on the outside. I got to get out. And I said, well, what are you going to tell me that's going to lead me to believe you're not coming back? And he paused for like 10 seconds, thought, and he looked at me and said, you know, Sheriff, I'm probably coming back. And I go, why is that? And I go, you said you don't want to be here. You want to be back with your kids and you want to provide for them. He goes, I got to make money when I leave. He goes, there weren't a lot of jobs in my community when I left. And he wasn't whining, but he was telling me, there weren't a lot of jobs. He goes, now I got a felony conviction. It's going to be trickier. He goes, I can always make money selling dope, though. And he goes, I can always make money doing that. You guys will eventually catch me, and I'll be back in here. And off he walked. And I remember thinking to myself, well, if we are actually going to change any of this stuff, instead of just reading the latest headline on another little child killed, we got to make these guys that are out there leaving my place eligible for jobs. Give them some skills so that they aren't just going back into
it. Okay. I'm not going to get into a whole debate over this because I like the idea of going out there and seeing the tomatoes. Okay?
Hey, how do you like yours?
Red. Medium red.
Medium red. Aristocrat.
See, you know, when you think of prison, you get pictures in your mind of all those old movies with rows and rows of guys behind bars. But it wasn't like that for wise guys. It really wasn't that bad.
The other thing that's happening is this business about what we should know about what internet sites are selling about our information. Hmm. How did you get involved in this?
Yeah, and see, that's one I've had that question posed to me a couple times, and I've often told people, I go, well, how wouldn't I? The thing about this is, from a law enforcement standpoint, when we're like tracking a bad guy and we need to find out about his cell phone, we have to go and get a subpoena. And to get the subpoena, we have to take it, go to the state's attorney. The state's attorney takes it to a grand jury. They will sign off on it more often than not. It then gets sent to the telephone company to get the records. It's then sent back to the grand jury. The grand jury then gives it to the state's attorney. And if it complies with everything, we get it back. But for like a private company who's just out making money off of stuff, they just take whatever they want of your private data. They do whatever they want with it. And to me, that in and of itself was bizarre, that for law enforcement going after a guy who we have probable cause to believe has done something bad, we have to rightfully jump through all these hoops to get the information. But for these private companies, they can get anything they want. And I guess overlaying that too, John, is that I've been obsessed with this notion that the society of ours is racing ahead with the next great app, the next great, you know, invention in the technology world, and everyone's just gobbling this all up. And no one's sitting there saying to themselves, what is this stuff doing to us as a person? What we're doing is we're giving up what little privacy we have and the ability to be, frankly, if you want to be alone in the world, you can be alone. Nowadays, I mean, we can track everybody on their phones.
Right,
we can
now
take all their information.
Listen to what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
Through my phone, right?
Yeah. I mean, and John,
it's off.
I honestly think the public is completely unaware because the bright lights are saying new phone, new app, new this and that, and people gobble it up, and no one's sitting there saying, whoa, time out. Do you understand that now means that this company will know where you were all day? They'll know what website you might have been browsing. And I go, do you know anybody who would like put a sandwich board on themselves saying, hi, my name's Tom, and this is all the websites I was on this morning, and here's all the phone calls I made, and here's where I've been all day? No one would do that, but that's in effect what we're doing.
So how did you get involved in this?
Well, because, another bizarre thing, you'll find this one interesting. About 5 or 6 years ago, I got a phone call from the Bulgarian consulate. Okay. And I immediately think, okay.
Regarding cheese.
Well, right. I'm thinking we have gone beyond just a national incident. We've now gotten involved with an international incident. We screwed something up.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have been nicer. So the counsel came and met with me, and they said, no, Tom, we just want to thank you. You got involved with a financial fraud case. It was some members of our community that did it. And we want to thank you, but just importantly, we want to give you a little heads up. And he, amazing guy, walked me right through. He said, during the Soviet Union days, that Bulgaria had, as many different satellites did, they had unique specialties depending on what country you're in. One of their big specialties was technology. And he said, when the Soviet Union collapsed, everyone was unemployed. And so the criminal elements, scooped up all of these very talented people, got very engaged with financial crimes. And so the stuff that you guys are doing right now, Tom, it's fine to do it. But just so you know, that's 5 years past where our criminals are already at. So you guys are 5 years behind. And I said, what can we do? And he wanted to fly me out to Sofia for some big conference. And I said, listen, I don't leave the county, let alone the country.
Right.
So we did a big Skype thing with them. And they showed us all these different things that they're working on and different things that we could do. And at the end of the day, they said, even the stuff we're showing you is so dated. The best you can do, Tom, is if you can narrow the universe of victims. And I started thinking to myself, the experts are telling us that. And at the same time, people are just spewing out every conceivable thing about themselves. Some of it voluntarily, where they're putting all their Facebook pictures and all this information about themselves. The other ones, they're oblivious that all their information
every
is flowing
app,
around.
Everything you go on, every time you sign on.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, through the bill that we were talking in Springfield, let's try to narrow the universe of victims by saying, listen, folks, we're not saying you shouldn't get this app, that app, or anything. We're just saying these companies have to just let you know if they're taking information about you personally and if they're giving it or selling it. And I was like, how could this be controversial? But boy, I found out
the other one. It sure
was,
right?
Yeah, we lost it.
It didn't make it, huh?
No, we got close.
I thought it made it out of the House.
Made it out of the Senate, made it to the House, and we were like 5 votes short of it, where we're going to try to come back in the veto session if Springfield still exists by then. And we're going to give it another try. But it's one of those things. People came out of the woodwork from all over the the Googles, the Facebooks, the rest of the companies flew people in from all over the country.
So you had all these guys that 10 years ago would have had ponytails and Armani suits.
Yeah.
And how they're in whatever jeans and stuff. And they're telling you that this, if you do this, e-commerce will be killed.
Oh, yeah. Making up all of this fantasy stuff. Because literally, we said all you have to do is in your terms of usage, you have to have a phone number or an email where a person firmly on their own has to go there to say, listen, I want to find out what information mine you're taking and where you're giving it to. That's it. It doesn't say that they can call and say, stop giving it. And by doing that, our goal was thinking, it's like if you have two different companies, one's taking the information and selling it, the other one doesn't, the people will just go to the other one then. And then the forces of capitalism will take over, and then that other company is going to have to explain to people, you know, why it's better to take all your information. And they kept saying all these hurdles would be put in place, all this insanity, where it's like, hey, have we gotten to that point now where we can't even agree that companies have to tell us what information are they taking from us? And it's like, you know, John, I'm not trying to get into this crazy world of 1984 where Big Brother's all over the place.
I'm there because it is.
But, I mean, people are oblivious.
I just saw the Comey testimony. What do you think of this Jeff man who, you know, you who are so wise in the ways of science? It seems like Tom's right. I mean, yeah, if you're going to have financial crimes, you have to narrow or shrink the size of the victim pool. And it's almost like people want to be victims with their technology.
It's the whole idea of, you know, convenience over you know, information and privacy. And people, like you said, don't even understand that they already been giving away their privacy. They just assume, oh, I check the box or I sign off on it. And to be clear, this is the right to know bill that you were pushing. And it's terrifying. And I've got friends who work in this field, are hackers, and friends who are white hats who do this illegally. And the stuff that they research and they read about, it terrifies them. All you see them ever talk about is, you know, if people knew what was what information was to be taking away. People have, like, the recordings of children, you know, in their cribs because they have a baby monitor. And a company has all the right in the world because they, you know, transfer it from the cloud and then transfer it to your phone. And they have the right to keep that information and know the voice of your child.
Or anything they might pick up on a baby monitor.
There was a certain type of baby monitor, I can't remember what one it was, that allowed you, it was like a teddy bear, and it allowed a child to, like, talk to the teddy bear to give a message to their family, to their mom and dad. And apparently they didn't do the proper security on that. Someone hacked it and got a hold of all these kids' messages to their parents. And it was like, you have got to be kidding me. And once again, as I said, all these companies flew in. I was informed again that just like in the old days when I was in Springfield, I've re-established all these lobbyists are back employed again because they have a bill of mine to kill.
I'm sure they were happy.
They were all happy. And they were ecstatic because they had these tortured arguments to try to kill this thing. And I kept, listen, I'm law enforcement, okay? We're the ones allegedly or supposedly want all your information. I want to trample on all your rights. And then we'll sort through it later on. And I'm sitting there saying, no. All of us have gone too far. We need to slow this down. We need to circle back and start saying, listen, there's this thing that makes us all human. It's called the ability to be an individual, to be private, and not have to have the world know everything about you. And we have raced so far ahead without asking those baseline questions, John, that is just, you know, destroying so much of us.
Well, your staff seemed to have done a very good job to get it through the Senate.
Oh, John Donovan did a phenomenal, phenomenal effort on this thing, and we were at the finish line, and it
looked like it kind of broke down partisan ways for a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, we got one Republican vote in the Senate, Senator Sam McCann, who was really, it was fantastic, his support, and in the House.
Sam's a conservative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And weren't there other conservatives who wanted to go for it? Because as a conservative myself, meaning I used to be a Southwest Side Democrat
right.
until they left me, except for Tom, that wouldn't conservatives be
That's what, honest to God, John, right. I actually thought it was going to break down a whole different way, that I was going to be getting a lot of conservative support from the Republican side mm-hmm. of the aisle, some libertarian support.
Right.
And that I was going to have a heck of a time with the Democratic side.
Right.
And it was the world set upside down. I was like, guys, what is I'm missing here? And I kept saying, listen, if you can figure a better way to do this, give me some ways. We'll tweak the bill. But underlying is we just want people to know what you're taking from them. But obviously, I mean, I wasn't born yesterday. The reality of it is as long as these companies can continue to still get this information, not have to tell anybody it.
It's all marketing.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
John, the amount of money is unreal that they make off of this stuff. And now all of a sudden, that got crimped down to where they have to either pay you to get your information
or ask you,
and now all of a sudden it's more complicated. That's huge money.
I've been an idiot for years, as I've been a journalist. One thing I never was interested in was marketing. Marketing to me was Benny Bentley calling me up. Let's go to Eli's for some steak or something. That's marketing. Where's Steve Neal? Let's go over to find something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But marketing clearly is not about writing press releases. Mm-hmm. That's why all these kids are marketers now, because it's all about this.
Yeah.
Pumping this data, mm-hmm. right? Moving it.
Analytics of the future.
And losing your freedom.
It really is.
Okay, so you failed. Now we're all like slaves now. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. Another one, Chuck, another one of my many losses up.
Right. No, seriously, though.
Oh,
is there a chance that this you can bring it up again? Or
yeah, I think our plan is to try to push it in the veto session. But once again, I don't know what their plans are in Springfield anymore. Are they going to have a veto session? Are they going to have special sessions?
Who knows?
It won't be part of a special session, but we're not giving up on it. And all we have to do is get the House. We need 5 more votes in the House, and we're onto the governor's desk. I don't know what his plans were one way or the other.
He probably will knock it down, right?
Yeah.
I would think.
But, the one thing, too, John, these folks who are very much engaged with this whole notion of the internet world exposing us to all these ills, and I'm not talking about the old cranky people like us, but I'm talking about the young kids who are sitting there saying they're taking too much of us out of this stuff. They're not happy, and they have methods that are well beyond my pay grade to work the internet to really make people's lives miserable for not standing up for individual liberty is what it is.
Another thing that's happening this year is it's summer, okay? So Mr. Lawman, because you are a lawman, how bad is it going to get?
John, it's not going to be good, because the issues here are uniquely bad. Does New York and L.A. have some issues that are similar? They have some similarities, but this is going to be a tough summer. I mean, there's no two ways about it. We're putting more and more of our police officers and deputies into the city than we've ever done before, and we're going to continue doing that. We've been doing a lot of it on the west side, and we're actually going to start doing some more south side work because there's been mm-hmm. some upticks there lately. But the reality of it is, John, there was some better ability to predict crime, for lack of a better word, where you can know where this gang was going to be whacking this gang because there was a drug war that everyone pretty much knew about, and you could have some predictability. Now this thing is atomized to such a level that there's no thoughtful person that's going to come to you and say, listen, I know this is going to be the hit here and this is going to go there.
The thing that that they're now suing for, that log
the algorithm. Yeah.
Right? Who's suing for that, Jeff? Somebody's suing.
I think it's one of the newspapers, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do they want to? They want to know.
Yeah, I think they want to know if
us.
Well, I'm not sure if it's true. Right.
Yeah, but maybe. I think it's because they want to see what are the factors that are woven into this, and if one of them is something that's violating people's civil rights or something. I know I'm confused. I don't know what the algorithm is. We sort of, I don't want to say do our same. We do very basic algorithms of where the crimes have been, shootings have been, and then we just try to flood an area.
Here's an algorithm. The darts live next to the Cassis. Okay, and they've had incidents back from our parents' day. Listen, everybody, the darts are not fighting with the Cassis, but I'm just saying in terms of just an argument.
Yeah.
So Smiths and Jones.
Yeah.
As a copper, okay, daddy shot the other daddy, mommy shot the grandma on the other side. You know what's
– Yeah.
Right, you got a sense of it. You know where it's coming from, and it's going to happen again.
Yeah, yeah. It's just and once again, I'm not just here to beat up on social media. That has taken in a different direction as well, because there's so many impulsive shootings now that are generated completely by someone's tweet to somebody dissing them, mm-hmm. and dissing someone in their gang, and off they go. And the ability to get on top of that is next to impossible as well. So it's just going to be bad, John. But the key to it, frankly,
and you have extra beds because you shrunk the size of the jail so you can fill it again.
Yeah, and that's I keep telling people.
Which is good, which I like to see.
And John, this I told people, I go, that's what jails are supposed to be for. We're supposed to fill them with these people that are shooting and harming people in there. And when we're people don't understand.
Wait a second. I grew up in a store business, right? A shopkeeper, son, right? Supermarket. But you're going to tell me that the lady. Like, I'm not talking about the crazy old lady who works for the priest who stole the crab meat, mm-hmm. so that she can make the salad at the rectory, crab meat, which is, we used to have that one. And finally we caught her and we're like, oh, you know, it was you stealing crab meat? No one in the store, no one in the neighborhood, 55th and California, could afford crab meat. You know what I mean? And we're like, what is this? Okay, so it's not, I don't want to put her in jail.
Yeah.
But the crew of women or men.
Sure.
Who come in and if you shake them, 10 or 15 people, 12, 30-pound frozen turkeys fall out from mm-hmm. from areas I don't know want to know where they held them mm-hmm. As they waddle out the store. That kind of pisses me off. I want that person in the can for 10, 15 days.
Yeah, we can do that, and we should do that. But here's the problem, John. The system is so ineffective. So ineffective. Think about that for a second. A jail is supposed to hold people waiting on their trial. I have, I think, two people in there waiting 10 years, two people waiting 9 years, five guys waiting 8 years.
I thought
years.
You had 180 days.
No, but see, that's the biggest fallacy. People say the Speedy Trial Act, it's 120 days if you're locked up, 180 if you're out. That's only if you know and use the magic words of demanding a trial. But you're discouraged by everyone from doing that. So demands of trial almost never happen. And so these guys sit in there, and they sit there forever. And it's so expensive, John.
Why do they demand a trial?
Because they're being informed that, you know, we can't get a new court date, and we'll have to deal with it. You know,
because the lawyers are getting paid by the state or what?
Well, there's a combination of things, John. One thing is, think about this for a second. I often said, not just because I'm a former prosecutor, but there is no prosecutor who would ever say, my case got better with age. Every case I ever had that got old got bad. My witnesses vanishes. They got shot. They got intimidated.
Right.
They picked up their own case, and now he's not a good witness anymore. Right. So they don't want it to delay. Now, the public defenders, we have a great relationship with them. They have big, massive caseloads. That's a big problem.
No one's complaining about them. They're great people.
Work
hard.
Yeah, and they've got massive caseloads. You said that, but they're, from the client standpoint, all the prisons. So if a guy knows he's going to prison, all the prisons are downstate. They'd rather serve as much of their time up here as possible because they get credit for it, because no one will visit them downstate.
Right.
B, they know the case gets worse as it gets older, so maybe dragging it out a little bit is good for their interests as well.
So their homies can get to the witness.
Yeah, so there's all these reasons that allowed this thing to go on. But
homies.
In thoughtful jurisdictions, they have case management where judges have time frames assigned to cases. So like your case of the retail theft case, they would look at that and say, listen, we don't need DNA on this one. We're giving it 3 months. If it's not disposed of in 3 months, we're going to have the presiding judge knock on the judge's door and say, what gives? Why is this case still in there costing the taxpayers $160 a day to house these people? What's taking so long? And if they don't dispose of it in the next month, they take the case away from them. So there's sort of like a public shaming. But right now, there's some phenomenal judges. There's some rotten judges. But they're all looked at the same because there's no system that ever judges. Here's the one that moves the cases. Here's the one that doesn't move the cases. And when I was a prosecutor, I had both ends of the spectrum. I had a great judge who made our lives miserable. If we didn't move on a case that was set for trial, mm-hmm. our lives were miserable. And we were stuck in that courtroom for 9 months. I had another judge, continuances to everybody all the time. And then eventually the person served all his time with the taxpayers in Cook County.
She got caught doing, getting the suntan in her backyard.
Yeah, no, we had a couple
funny.
Of those.
But, but
that's where, as I say, people don't understand the connection there.
Right.
When this system's allowed to just sort of you know, slowly move along like this.
Right.
And think about, like, from a kid standpoint, when you set the event so far away from the punishment, that, you know, sort of, you know, dissipates, you know, this whole notion of, you know, we're going to fix you for doing this type of thing. So nothing good happens there, and then you dump them back into these communities. And so my point is not like everybody who doesn't shoot someone should not be in a jail. No. But for these other people who are like property crimes and stuff like that, they should be held in a jail if their background shows that they're going to be out there doing it again. But they need to be in the jail for 3 months, 4 months, and then down to the prison system, serve your time, and be done with it.
I don't want to put anybody in prison for stealing a frozen turkey, hiding it between their legs, but I wouldn't mind, like, 20 days in jail.
But, John, think about it from the store owner standpoint. You know better than anybody. The longer that case goes.
Because I saw that frozen turkey, Tom. My aunt Fanny goes, you have the celery, you got the breadcrumbs.
But no turkey.
You have the no turkey? Where's the turkey?
Who needs a turkey?
Where's the turkey? She was like 80 years old. She's like, where's the turkey, madam? And all of a sudden, kadoosh. I'm bagging the groceries, kadoosh, and it starts sliding out. It slides down past me, hits that thing where the door, magic door opener, hits that, goes right out on 55th Street, into the street.
A turkey
frozen
got loose.
Turkey.
Turkey got loose. We're going to catch that one.
All right, listen, another thing I got to ask you about. The summer, Tom Dart has got a house full of kids, wife, I think a dog, right?
Two
dogs. What do you guys do for the summer? And tell me part of that is Rainbow Cone.
Yeah, the kids like Rainbow Cone, and they love Baskin-Robbins, which I was informed the other day, I don't know if this resonated with you at all, but I kept referring to his 31 flavors. My son stopped me on the way back from his baseball game the other day, because we always stop there after his game. And he's like, Dad, I just want to let you know. He goes, no one but you calls it 31 flavors.
We used to call it 31 flavors. We didn't call it Baskin.
We still do them, because the ice cream shop in my hometown was a Baskin-Robbins, but it was 31 flavors. And so, yeah, let's go for 31 flavors. But it's definitely a bygone era.
Oh, it is.
No one calls it 31 flavors?
No.
Yeah. Does anyone go to Baskin-Robbins anymore?
Sure.
Have to go to the fancy.
Well, now it's always – now it's a lot of times now it's Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins.
Yes. Yeah, what's going on with that?
Well, you know, people like their coffee and their ice cream.
I think it's like a cousin.
Right.
The cousin's like, I have the Dunkin' Donuts, and then the other guy has
Baskin,
and he has the cousins together.
Save on rent.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. But
it's like a Greek thing.
Yeah,
I did the Greek accent first in case any thought police were out there.
Yeah, but we'll be doing a lot of that. We have a lot of my son's in a baseball team that will go through midway through the summer, and he's got soccer he does as well. So we'll be doing that. We usually go up to Indiana. My mom has a small summer house, but it's sort of off the beaten path. It's small, but it's great. No one bothers you.
So do you go up there with them, or do you like get them up there? Dad then goes back to work like during the week?
Usually what I'll do, I'll take like a week, maybe a second week if possible, and I'll just stay up there. But then sometimes I'll go back and forth.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, it's my mom's house, so she's up there, and it's not
big.
She
wants the kids around her?
Well, it's too crowded when all of us are there. And so it's usually when she's not up there, we'll go up there for a week or something.
You've got brothers? You've got...
They don't go up there, though. I'm the only one.
Where the Dart clan, you know, I could just imagine them, like, in a forest preserve someplace, like a big barbecue, some bagpipes, beer, softball.
No.
What's going on? Where does that happen?
It doesn't. Christmas, Easter.
It's a Christmas, Easter thing.
Yeah, I love my siblings. They're great. They live all up north, though. They all moved.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the only one left in the south side.
I have a brother that moved east. Virginia. Mm-hmm. I hardly ever see him.
Oh, that's east, yeah.
But, okay, so.
Yeah, but so we'll do a lot of that. We got my girls are all in volleyball and finishing up softball. But there's
your wife's a saint, then. She handles all this.
Well, yeah. She's at a
– because you're like showing up for the games and stuff.
Other than my son. My son, I'm the assistant baseball coach. So I'm the first base coach who's routinely waving guys on.
You
and
send them.
Being absolutely sending them. I was like, guys, you'll never remember the time you stood at first base and didn't move. But when you made it to second that one, you always remember that double. It. You won't remember that single. So let's go for it, guys.
Especially these pitchers, right? If they're not – although sometimes it's an automatic pitch out for a lot of them, right? How old is this?
15.
The summer, isn't that the time of kids and ice cream and just sitting on the porch and
– water balloons.
Water balloons.
Oh, yeah. And, we have a lot of that.
Right?
We have
a lot. That's what it should be.
Right.
Watermelon, right? Telling stories with your uncles. Like hearing stuff about your uncles that you never
heard. Right.
Yeah. Like Tom Dart, like, do you ever like bust your siblings?
Oh, my younger brother.
Oh, you really think you should see the picture of him when he was Ted Nugent or something.
Oh, no,
right?
No. We had one of my daughters convinced that my brother, my youngest brother, he's shorter than me, but he's not ridiculously shorter than me. Well, actually, most of my daughters were actually. Were convinced that, and I was the one that did the convincing, that he actually was one of the lollipop kids in the Wizard of Oz. Yeah, and so they were very young then, so whenever he'd call, they'd ask him. He goes, Uncle Timmy, were you really? And it was like, tell your brother and your daddy to knock it off. And it finally came to a head when McDonald's, when their Happy Meals were giving out McDonald's characters. And one daughter got the same one twice, and it was a lollipop kid. And on her own, she just opens up, pulls out, and she goes, darn it, I got Uncle Timmy again.
Nice evil uncle that you were.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's paying him back for all he says about me, which is, you know, voluminous about my dressing habits, the fact I don't eat at restaurants. I just eat at home all the time. I have no life, you know. But, yeah, no, we ride each other pretty good.
But you can also eat, if you wish now, apparently, right, what we were talking about earlier, at the Gourmet Sheriff's Department.
Oh,
right?
And I highly recommend it.
Thanks a lot, Tom Dart.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, and have a great summer.
You too,
man. And good luck with the Right to Know.
Thank you.
Because to me, that's a huge thing.
It is.
And we'll see. See you later, everybody. Talk next week.